sometimes we'll be preaching to a crowd of 5 or even 10,000 people. And it's really wonderful to get 10,000 people shouting at the top of their lungs, Hare Krishna. That's it, Hare Bol. So this song, Jagannath Astakam, is now is the time when, of course, July 14th was Rath Yatra in Puri. But Rath Yatras are going on all over the world. I think today or tomorrow is Rath Yatra in Amsterdam. And recently there was Rath Yatra in Paris and Rath Yatra in Berlin and someday Rath Yatra in Zagreb. But this song I remember hearing in Los Angeles, one of my very favorite bhajan singers, his name is Agni Dev. Have any of you heard of Agni Dev? He's a Gandharva, I think, from his last lifetime. He sings very sweetly. And Pushpadanta. So they would sing in Los Angeles Temple for Jagannath this song, and you know, you just kind of melt away listening and just, you know, you just melt. So we're going to try and melt your minds this evening with Mayapur Das's version. We were singing this in this last winter, myself and Mayapur and Tommy Slav and I think Purjit, who was there? Purjit was there for a little while. We spent a month in Jagannath Puri. So we were singing the song every morning. I really like it. So we've given you the, I hope there's enough to go around. And we hope that this is probably, how many of you have sung this song before? Oh, some of you have, one or two. That's pretty good. I hope you'll join in with us to the best you can, because we have an even tougher one after this one. Okay.
Gracias. Thank you.
Sometimes makes the melodious sounds of playing music and singing throughout the groves on the banks of the Kalindi River. He's like a bumblebee, experiencing great delight while tasting the nectar of the lotus-like faces of the cowherd damsels. His lotus feet are worshipped by great personalities such as Lakshmi, Shiva, Brahma, Indra, and Ganesh. May that Lord of the universe kindly become visible unto me. In his left hand he holds a flute. Upon his head is a peacock feather, and around his hips is a fine silken cloth. From the corners of his eyes, he casts sidelong glances upon his loving companions. He is most fond of the pastimes he conducts while living in Sri Vrindavan. May the Lord of the universe kindly become visible unto me. Now, some of you may wonder here, how is it that Jagannath, who is from Neelachala, Puri, spends most of his time or conducts his most fond pastimes in Vrindavan? So this is actually a very important point. We Gaudiyas worship Jagannath in the mood of Krishna taking or being taken, not taking, being taken by Radharani and the gopis back to Vrindavan. As you all know, Lord Krishna, as a young boy, stole the hearts of all the residents of Vrindavan, but especially he stole the gopis' hearts. They were completely immersed in love of Krishna. In fact, some gopis who were married and could not go out to attend the Rasa dance or the Krishna culture club. Their parents kept them at home, or their husbands kept them at home. When Krishna blew upon his flute, all the gopis came out to join him. They were just captivated by his flute. So those that were married, some of their husbands would not allow them to go, naturally, thinking that they were the husbands of the gopis. So the gopis just gave up their lives. They just couldn't exist any longer. So then Krishna left Vrindavan after attracting all the gopis, after inducing them to, you could say, not exactly, but transcendental adultery. And that's a very wonderful subject matter, that we are all Krishnas. We're all female in relationship to Krishna. And every woman is Krishna's wife and Krishna's paramour. Anyway, apart from that, Krishna left Vrindavan, and that was also heartbreaking for the gopis when he left. It was a Krura who came from Mathura, and a Krura wanted Krishna to come and deal with Kansa, King Kansa, the wicked king of Mathura, who had thrown his own father into jail and had committed so many vicious atrocities. Even Slobodan Milosevic looked like a small timer in comparison to King Kansa. So a Krura came to take Krishna away, and the gopis, they couldn't believe it. You're leaving us now after attracting our hearts? We're totally dependent on you. They threw themselves under the chariot wheels. They weren't going to let Krishna go. They'd have to run us over. we give up our lives. Anyway, Krishna laughed. He said, "Don't worry, I'll come back." Of course, he didn't return. He went from Mathura to Dwarka. And there, of course, he became he assumed the mood of a great king. And he had many wives. The head wife was Rukmini, but he had 16,000 more than wives, which is another proof that Krishna is God. Of course, you all know that story. Any ordinary man today has difficulty maintaining one wife. What to speak of 16,108 wives. So that's proof that Krishna's God, that he could perform such a miraculous feat. So anyway, there was a solar eclipse on August the 11th. It's coming up very soon. And you'll be surprised to know that the configuration of stars for this solar eclipse on August 11th is just as inauspicious as the one 5,000 years ago. There hasn't been such a configuration of planets that has been so auspicious in the last 5,000 years, right? It's an in-house astrologer. So anyway, Krishna and all the residents of Dwarka, they came to Kurukshetra to perform austerity or to ward off the effect, to bathe in the holy waters of Kurukshetra and to ward off the effect, malefic, the evil effect of the solar eclipse. By the way, it is the solar eclipse will be visible in Croatia, and Vaishnavas are advised to stay indoors. Don't go rushing out to see the eclipse, with your telescope. Oh, I can see the eclipse. You also may see some other things you don't like, but Vaishnavas remain indoors and fast during the time of the solar eclipse, which may be a few hours. I don't know exactly how long. But because Kurukshetra is not far from Vrindavan, the gopis got the idea, aha, Krishna's coming. So they all went from Vrindavan to Kurukshetra, ostensibly to perform pious activity at Dharma Kshetra, Kurukshetra, the place of Dharma Kurukshetra. That was the external reason. But actually, they all just wanted to see Krishna again. But when they got there, they saw Krishna in his royal dress with his jewels and his crown and all his jewels, and surrounded by women with gold saris and so many soldiers. And the gopis said, "This is not the Krishna that we know. It was just a cowherd boy." So they were disturbed by that. And Radharani especially she couldn't control her anxiety and her lamentation. So they wanted to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan. "Let us go back to the forest where we played in Vrindavan on those beautiful moonlit nights where we danced, and let's not stay here in all this sophistication." So that Rath Yatra actually signifies Krishna going back to Vrindavan, being pulled by all the gopis. And we worship Jagannath as Krishna, as Shyam Sundar. Now the residents of Dwarka, they worship Jagannath as Jagannath in awe and reverence, as Lakshmi Narayan. In fact, there are many pastimes during the Rath Yatra when Jagannath goes on the parade. He stops, the Rath ends at Gundicha temple, and Jagannath stays there before returning to the temple. So at that time, Lakshmi Devi, Krishna, at least Jagannath, tells her that, "I'm just going for a little ride, don't worry dear, I'll be back soon." But then he doesn't come back soon, so Lakshmi becomes very angry, and she comes out of the temple with all her army. Has her own army, and she comes to Gundicha temple, and she sees all the caretakers of the Rath and the devotees of Jagannath, and she has her soldiers start beating them, beating them up, because she's, and punishing them, putting them in jail, because she's there. "Where's my husband, Jagannath?" So they worship Jagannath as Lakshmi Narayan. And it's funny also, they the mood of worship in Puri is very spontaneous in one sense. In other words, they're not, their rituals are not according completely to scripture. And one time, Ramanuja Acharya, you've all heard of Ramanuja, huh? Everybody's heard of Ramanuja Acharya. So he came to Jagannath Puri, and he began to argue with all the pandas and the pujaris there that your mode of worship is not right. But actually, Jagannath liked their worship because they were so dedicated to him, even though it wasn't exactly according to scripture. Anyway, Ramanujacharya defeated them all. And then that night, while Ramanuja was resting, Jagannath came and picked him up and threw him 800 miles south. And, of course, it had an auspicious ending in that Ramanujacharya discovered where, at the place where he landed after his 800 mile flight, that there was an ancient temple there of, I think, Vamanadev. I'm not sure, I can't remember exactly, but anyway, they worship Jagannath as Lord of the universe, whereas we worship Lord Jagannath as master of the gopis, Gopi Jana Balava. So it's an important point, and here it's mentioned in the translation. How many of you have been to Rath Yatra? A Rath Yatra somewhere? Oh, it's a lot of fun. You have to have one here. Croatia, you really have to do it. So, I don't know where you'd get Jagannath from. You can install him somewhere. He's very merciful. In Bombay, we had Jagannath who traveled in a bus. I mean, this was a big Jagannath. He was three, Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra, like about maybe 2 feet wide and 3.5 feet tall. Big Jagannath. And he traveled in the back of a Sankirtan bus for many years. In the bus, the back door would open, and then people would come and actually worship Jagannath as if it was a temple. And finally, a few years ago, he was installed. We have three temples in Bombay, three beautiful big temples. And so, anyway, he was installed there. But he's very merciful. What I meant to say was he's very merciful. And, of course, Jagannath was the first deity that Prabhupada installed in the Western world. He did not know how to introduce deity worship to the Westerners, how they would take it. But Jagannath, on his own, came to Prabhupada. That's a nice story in the Lilamrita, how Malati and one other devotee bought little tiny Jagannath in an export store, and they brought it to Prabhupada and said, "Prabhupada, what's this?" And Prabhupada immediately offered his obeisances. He said, "Oh, Jagannath has come." So he understood Jagannath wanted to be worshipped, and then he said, "Go back and see if there's two other small little ones." And sure enough, Baladev and Subhadra were there in the store, and they bought them, and then Shyamasundar carved big deities, and those were the first deities that I worshipped in San Francisco. And Jagannath, he's very merciful. On the shore of the great ocean is a palace, a large palace that glows with the effulgence of solid gold, and is topped by a towering temple spire that appears to be a blue sapphire mountain. Residing therein, along with his mighty brother Balabhadra, and in between them his sister Subhadra, Lord Jagannath bestows opportunities for all godly souls to render various devotional services. May that Lord of the universe kindly become visible to me. He is a bottomless ocean, fathomless. I'm sure you don't know what that is. He is a fathomless ocean of causeless mercy, and his beautiful complexion is like a cluster of blackish rain clouds. Now this black of Jagannath, or of Krishna for that matter, Shyamasundar, is very beautiful, like a monsoon rain cloud. Once in New York, a devotee was in a darshan like this. Prabhupada was giving darshan, answering questions. It was in a temple room. And there was some Afro-American devotee at the back of the room. And Prabhupada was talking, and the boy kept trying to attract Prabhupada's attention. Oh, oh, Prabhupada, oh, 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 like that. And Prabhupada was ignoring him. And then finally Prabhupada said, "Yes." And then the boy got up and said, "Prabhupada, is Krishna black?" This is a black African American. And Prabhupada said, "Yes, but not like you." It was a fun one. Prabhupada was so much fun. You can't believe how witty. I mean, he was a transcendental person. He was very serious about spiritual life, but he was always so funny. He was jovial, and it was just so much fun to be around. Although he was so purifying to be around, you felt shy to be in his presence, but he was irresistible, like chutney. A good chutney, Prabhupada said, is so hot. A good chutney should be hot. It should burn a little bit. So it's so hot that you can't, you know, you beware of it. But it's so sweet that you can't resist it. So, of course, Prabhupada wasn't hot, but he could be heavy at times. But he was so funny. where are we? Fathomless ocean. He is worshipped by the best of the demigods. Oh, he derives great pleasure by hearing the words of affectionate chastisement from his beloved goddess Lakshmi. His face is like a fully blown, spotless lotus flower. Have any of you seen lotus flowers? Do you have them here in Croatia? It's one of the sweetest smelling flowers you can ever imagine, at least available on this planet. We don't have Parijata flowers here, but the lotus flower you get in India, all over India, they're very, very beautiful and very aromatic. It just, you know, you take it and put it in your face and you don't want to take it, you know. It's not like these flowers. I'm sure they look pretty, but, you know. It's not like that. He is worshipped by the best of the demigods and sages, and his character and activities are glorified in song by the topmost personified Upanishads. May that Lord of the universe kindly become visible unto me. As the Lord mounts his Rathyata cart and parades along the road, there is a constant accompaniment of loud prayers and songs chanted by large assemblies of saintly brahmanas. Hearing their hymns, Lord Jagannath is favorably disposed towards them. He blesses them. He's an ocean of mercy and is the true friend of all the worlds. May that Lord of the universe, along with his consort Lakshmi, who was born from the ocean of nectar, kindly become visible unto me. So Lakshmi Devi is an expansion of Radharani, and she is born from the ocean of nectar, and she's Lord Narayan's or Jagannath's eternal consort. He is the ornament adorning the head of Parabrahma, the supreme spiritual reality. His eyes are like the blossom petals of a blue lotus flower. And he resides in the Neelachala. Puri is called Neelachala. There's a hill there called Neelachala Hill. And he resides in the Neelachala temple that resembles a sapphire hill. His lotus feet are placed upon the heads of Lord Anantadev. He is overwhelmed by the flow of transcendental loving mellows, and he becomes happy only by embracing the luscious divine form of Srimati Radharani. May that Lord of the universe kindly become visible unto me. I certainly do not pray for a kingdom, nor for gold, rubies, and wealth. I do not ask for an excellent and beautiful wife, which is a possession desired by all ordinary men. I simply pray for that Lord of the universe whose glories are sung by Lord Shiva from age to age to kindly become visible to me. When I was in Kirk, I read in the newspaper a statement by the American ambassador. Now, here's a very important person, you would think, in terms of his stature, his position in societies. The ambassador of the American government to the country of Croatia, and people look up to him for an example. So one would think, while being interviewed in the newspaper, that he would say something relevant, worth hearing. So what did he say? He said something like, I very much like Croatian food, and I'm always looking at Croatian women. I mean, you know, he's just a common, ordinary man who, there's a story about a fox a bunch of tantra. A fox is, you know, just an ordinary fox. He howls at the moon whenever the moon comes out. You know, foxes go out and, you know, you can hear them in the, if you stay in the forest or in the woods, you hear all of the wolves and the foxes howling. So this fox happened to go near a farmer's house, and the farmer was painting his fence. So he'd left a can of blue paint on the fence, and the fox happened to knock it over, and he got completely covered in blue. So then when he went back into the forest, all the animals started to think, wow, what kind of fox is this? He's very special. And, you know, first a few animals, then all the other animals, they began to worship him and serve him, and he got very much into it too. He liked it. And they had a big throne for him, and they put him up on the throne, and they were thinking he would be the solution to all their problems, you know. And then one night the full moon came out, and sure enough, the fox jumped off his throne and ran after the moon and began howling. So you'll find the so-called leaders of society are and we're in tough shape. And they're just low-class people with very little intelligence. They don't andaya tandaya upaniya manas. They don't know the purpose of life. And they're only interested in getting money and women. That's all they want. They want to exploit the public for material opulence as long as they can. Look at the whole system of democracy. It's probably called a demon crazy democracy. Demon crazy. Because you get into office by making so many promises that if you give me your vote, I'll do this for you. And you need money for the election, so you make so many promises to companies and organizations and different groups, different lobbies, they call them lobbies, or people who have some agenda. So they'll go and say, we'll give you a whole block of votes. We have 5,000 people in our organization, but we want influence after you get elected. So the guy makes so many promises, and he gets into office finally, and he can't do good for people. He knows the next election is in 4 years, or I don't know, 4 years here? 4 years. And I could be kicked out, so I should only do things which will keep my vote bank. And I've got to pay back so much money. So then he'll only do things to get money. So it's by nature, it's a crazy system. And you don't have anybody who's actually trained, like a kshatriya who's trained from childhood to be a leader and who has his own independent wealth and just, he's free to just think of the people and their good, their ultimate good, their spiritual good. But you just have another demon in office. This is a nice prayer. We were just reading about, who was it? Oh, the six Goswamis. We sang a song last night about the six Goswamis. Kopina Kantasra Kasratau. They were leaders of men, but they lived a very austere and simple life. Practically the only possession they had was their loincloth, their kopin. So they obviously had no agenda. They weren't interested in exploiting people while giving them instructions, because there's nothing that you've got that they wanted. They don't want wealth. You give them wealth And in the Mahabharata, there's so many instances where big kings would give gold and jewels and horses and elephants to the Brahmins in charity. But the Brahmins wanted to live simply, so they'd accept the gift and they'd immediately give it away, because their only interest was spiritual. So this is a devotee of Jagannath. He doesn't have material desires. O Lord of the demigods, please take away this useless material existence that I am undergoing. Useless material existence. Come on, Paritya, Mom, he comes sharanam, but just surrender to me. Mam ekam means me alone. Sharanam Braja. Depend fully upon me for everything. Yoga kshema vahami aham. I will protect you materially. Eshavos trishta kama duk. There'll be abundant supply. You don't need to worry. If you just accept me as your friend, suridam sarva bhutanam, Gyatamam Shantim Richati, you'll attain lasting peace and you'll be protected by the Lord, Name Bhakta Pranashati. And even that, even more than that, your purva karma, which is the real reason why you're suffering in life, is the reactions to your past sinful activities. I mean, I'm amazed. There is such disparity in the world. This appealed to me as a 7 or 8 year old kid. You know, I was a child genius. When I was 7 or 8 years old in school, and people used to come around our class and they would be asking for little donations. I don't know why they would ask grade 2 kids for donations, but anyway, they would tell us about Bangladesh, or at that time it was the Belgian Congo, today it's Ethiopia, or something like that, Sudan, or whatever. And it really hurt me. I thought, why am I born in a wealthy, you know, American family, Canadian family, with no problems, and these little kids, look at them, they're just like me, but they have nothing. And I used to think, why? But I can't believe it, that people don't think why. That there must be some reason for all the disparity, all the difference in our situation, why people are suffering. It's an obvious question for anyone with half a brain. Forget a whole brain, just have half a brain. It's an obvious question. But people are so intoxicated by sense gratification. They're literally captured, literally bewildered by the prospect of sense gratification. That they can't think. It's not that, what do they think? They don't think. That's the problem. They don't think. So, Krishna says, Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo, all of your paps, Sarva Papebhyo, Moksha Yishami Masuja. I'll free that. I'll wipe out the whole balance. I'll free you. I'll protect you from your past karma. Just surrender to me. Just be dependent on me. You cannot charge into the kingdom of God. You can't, you know, like breaking a barrier, like smashing through the Berlin Wall or something. You can't, you know, break into the kingdom. Here I am, you know, what's happening? You can't do that. There are barriers there that are beyond your imagination. First of all, Jai and Vijay are there, and they're heavy dudes, you know. Jai and Vijay. They're the ones who became here in Yakashipu and here in Yaksha, and Ravan and Kumbhakarna, and Shishupal and Dantavakra. That's how powerful they are. So you can't barge your way into the kingdom of God. You have to cleanse your heart. And it's possible. It is possible. Believe me. Sometimes we fall into this kind of illusion. We think, geez, I've been chanting for, you know, 85 years and I haven't made any progress yet. You know, what's going on? But believe me, you're making progress. You are. If you just look a little carefully, if you had, you know, if you could have made a Xerox copy of your heart or something when you first joined, you first started chanting, you know, color Xerox, of course. And if you would examine yourself now, you would say that your attitudes have changed to some degree. You have made progress by chanting Hare Krishna. Everybody. So the process does work. And abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagyena chagriyate. If you just practice, continue practicing devotional service, you'll achieve the goal immediately, 3 months from now, 20 years from now. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada said, and this is amazing, but he said, and I don't believe it, text that one. He said it took him 32 years to perfect his chanting. Now, I think that was his humility. I kind of believe that he's a Shaktivesh avatar. But maybe because he did come as a Vaishnava and he did act like a conditioned soul. Not exactly a conditioned soul. He never ate meat in his life. He never took intoxication. He never broke the regulative principles. And throughout his life, he always thought of Krishna. Right from his early childhood, the five-year-old boy, four-year-old boy, he'd wake up in the morning and his father was doing Mangal Arati. Right from his early childhood, he was always thinking of Krishna. But anyway, he said it took him 32 years, so, you know, at least it's going to take us 33 to perfect our chanting. It may take a little longer, but it doesn't matter because there's no other place to go but back to Godhead. There's no other place to go. You can't make the bathroom smell nice. You can put incense, you can put a fan, you can put an air conditioner. The bathroom, if it's anything like my bathroom, it's going to stink from time to time. You should just finish your business in the bathroom quickly and get out. You're not meant to spend a long time there. And we're not meant to be in this miserable material world. And Krishna is offering us a ticket back to Godhead. And all we have to do is accept his shelter. And it's not that difficult. We just have to talk about Krishna, sing about Krishna, associate with devotees of Krishna, eat Krishna's prasadam, somehow or other keep Krishna in the center of our lives. Even if we're the worst devotee in the world, and even if we're weak, let's say, just for argument's sake, let's say that the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. Have you ever heard that one? In the Bible. It's the truth. It's, you know, spirit is willing. We want to go back to Godhead. And even Arjuna asked the same question, Krishna. And Krishna says, Kamesha, Krodesha, Rajagunsa, Mudbhava, Mahasano Mahapatma Vidyanam Ina Vairinam. The reason why you can't advance as quickly as you want to is because we're contaminated by lust, anger, and greed. And, you know, we're all in the same boat, more or less. We're all in the same condition. We all came to this world. Why did we come here? You know? Well, how did we come here? Icha dvesha samuddhena, dvandva mohena bharata. All living beings who come here, they came for the same reason, to try to live independently of Krishna. And they're overcome with so many desires. Now, if we just learn to dovetail those desires, even if we're not very good at it, but it's a fact that Krishna is so kind that he will help you all the way along. In fact, you know what your main problem is right now? You know what your main problem is? Your main problem is you're totally ruined for material life. You're caught. You cannot get away. You can try. You can try. You may make it for a year or 2 years. You may even make it for one lifetime if you're especially stubborn. But you will never be able to forget Krishna's holy name. You'll never be able to forget the teachings of Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Once you've opened your eyes and seen the beauty of a flower, you know, if you're asleep or you're in darkness or you're blind, you're born blind, just imagine what it's like for a person who's born blind and all they see is darkness in their life. And then they have an operation. I once saw a movie like this last week. No, long time ago. Long before I was in the movie. Tisk, tisk, tisk. But it was on an airplane. I was traveling. I couldn't. This guy was born blind and he'd never seen anything, but he was such a nice guy that this one doctor, female doctor, was attracted to his personality. So she arranged for him to get the very best treatment, and they operated on his eyes. And it showed him, it was a true story actually, they showed him first opening his eyes and being able to see the world for the very first time. He saw light and he saw, you know, variety, he saw form, he saw beauty. And he was like a child, he became like a child. He was so delighted with it because he had never seen anything like it. He didn't know what color, he had no idea what color was. So by surrendering ourselves to Krishna, even a little bit, we learn something about happiness which cannot be understood by nuclear rocket scientists. Something very beautiful. And we'll never be able to forget that. So at this stage of the program, we've got a little rock and roll bhajan for you here. It's actually not a rock and roll bhajan, it's another one of my favorites. This is in Hindi, believe it or else. It's not in Bengali, it's not in Sanskrit, it's in Hindi. And I used to travel with a group of devotees in India. We had a traveling Sankirtan party. We had three jeeps and trailers, and we traveled across India And as I said, we played to groups of 5,000-10,000 people a night. And even if this was in 72, Tamal Krishna, now Goswami, he was there with us, and Garga Muni, Brahmananda's brother, Hari Kesha was there, and Gopal Swami, myself, Dinanath, one of the biggest, I don't know if any of you have heard Delhi Pandal Kirtans or Dina, he's the best blues kirtan singer in the sky. Have you heard Dinanath? He's good, man. I mean, he's good. Yeah. So, and we had this big party of about 15 devotees. Wow, I got some memories there. We broke up into two groups. At one point, it was summertime at one point, and it was about 110 degrees Fahrenheit. That's hot. You could not move during the daytime. We all slept. The temple commander came around and tried to get us up. We told him to shove off. No, we didn't have a temple commander, but we all slept in the daytime. But the funniest part was we had these two groups. It was Garga Muni, Achyutananda, you know, the guy who sings the Vaishnava song book, compiled that. And Tamal was not so much at fault. He was more diplomatic. But who else was involved on their side? And then there was me, Dinanath, Hari Kesha. And we used to fight like anything, you know. It was really funny. And so anyway, every night we would have these bhajans, and I can't keep a tune, you know. I got a lousy voice. Achyutananda would always be smashing me, you know, play the kartals right. Because we were in front of a big crowd, but he was, at that time, 1972, he was the guru, you know. Garga Muni was the businessman. Probably used to call him Garga Money. Because he was, you know, he was really good at making life members, among other things. He was from New York and he was Jewish, so that explains everything. Even though I couldn't sing, I used to love to sit on stage and listen to Achyutananda sing. Because, you know, he's another Gandharva or mystic yogi. This guy, he was so amazing. He gave the most brilliant lectures. He had the fastest brain alive, you know, like, you know, the cowboy's the fastest gun alive, you know. Achyutananda could argue with people, and he was really fast. So he loved to, you know, Indians would try to come up and argue with him, and he would, you know. So, anyway, this was one song that I remember, one bhajan that I saw here. One bhajan that I remember, which is, I can't get it out of my brain, even though I can't sing it properly, but I think you'll like it. Okay, who's going to sing it? Oh, you are. Okay, Mayapur. Please try and sing along with us. And do you have anything else to tell them? About the refrain? If you can't sing the song, then you can sing Radhe Sham Sham Sham, even if you can't keep up with the Hindi. As soon as it comes to Radhe Sham Sham Sham, what we can do is the ladies will all say Radhe and the men will all say Sham Sham Sham. Okay? Can you remember that? Whenever we come to Radhe Sham Sham Sham, first the ladies will say Radhe. And the man will say, Shama, Shama, Sham.
That's a deep repeating part.
You say it, say it. Thank you.
The husband of the goddess of fortune, who is the transcendental Cupid and the enemy of the demon Mura. Glories to the divine couple Radhe Shyam, also known as Shyama Shyam. Glories to Lord Keshava, who has fine hair, who removes the miseries of the age of Kali.
Radhe Shyam Shyam Shyam. Radhe
Shyam Shyam Shyam.
Radhe
Nobody knows Krishna in Vrindavan, they just know Radha. Oh Krishna, you wear beautiful earrings and you have lovely widened eyes. You see this habit of wearing earrings that people have now? It's very, very old custom. Krishna wore earrings. Maybe they're trying to imitate Krishna, I don't know. You have lovely widened eyes. Around your neck hangs the splendorous Vaijanti flower garland. Your complexion is most excellent. Radhe!
Shama, shama, shama.
Thank you. Sometimes you secretly plunder yogurt and eat it. And sometimes you design a rasa dance performance with young gopis of the forest of Madhuvan. There dances Vipina Bihari, you who love to sport in the forest. Radhe!
Shama, shama.
You herd the cows in the company of the cowherd boys. You, the monarch of the Yadu dynasty, thus wander from forest to forest, carrying a blanket draped over your shoulder. Radhe!
Shama, shama, shama.
Because you, O Murari, repeatedly steal fresh butter from the homes of the women of Vraja and secretly eat it, they have named you Makhan Chor, the butter thief. Radhe!
Shama, shama, shama.
One day, you curbed the pride of Indra by lifting the great Govardhan mountain upon the tip of your fingernail, thus winning for yourself the name Giridhari. Radhe!
Shama, shama, shama.
Everybody knows that story of Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill? Yeah? Everybody knows that story, right? Krishna, Indra was being worshipped by the Nanda Maharaj and all the cowherd men in Vrindavan for auspicious blessings because Indra is in charge of, among other things, he's in charge of rain. And the farmers, they need rain for their food grains. Without rain, the drought, and there's no food grains. So then Krishna came along and he told his father, look, there's no need to worship Indra, you can just worship me. And Nanda Maharaj was a little surprised. He knew Krishna was great because he had killed Putana and he had killed Palambasura and so many other demons, and they knew there was something special about him, but they weren't sure what. But now here Krishna is telling them to stop worshiping Indra and to worship him. So anyway, they argued back and forth, and finally Krishna defeated them, and so they decided to worship Krishna. So then Indra saw that he wasn't being worshipped, and he became furious. Now, Indra is a great devotee of the Lord. Of course, Indra, the post of Indra. There are many great souls who sometimes take birth as Indra. But it's a government post, as you can say. So, anyway, Indra's always getting himself, not always, but a lot of times you hear about himself getting in trouble. He's surrounded by opulence and Bhogaisvarya Prasaktanam Dayaparita Chetasam. I know in our Bombay temple in Juhu, you know, there's a lot of material opulence there in that temple. It's probably the most opulent temple in ISKCON. It's right in the middle of Bollywood. You've heard of Hollywood, but in Bombay they call it Bollywood. and all the actresses, the beautiful Indian actresses and actors and all the wealthy businessmen, they all come to our temple. So, you know, here's all these pure-hearted brahmacharis. I say that with tongue in cheek, but anyway. They sometimes get bewildered by all this opulence. And it can be a danger. Therefore, devotees generally are advised. Once I was with Prabhupada and some other devotees, and we went on an evening program to a life member's house. And it was a very wealthy man, and he had, you know, huge house with literally dozens and dozens of servants. All the floors in his house were made of marble and what's that other stone? Granite. And, you know, he had at least 6 or 7 cars in his garage, a Mercedes, a BMW, a this or that. He was wealthy. So we had a nice program, and we had dinner there, and it was very nice. And then when we left, we went back to Juhu in the car. Srila Prabhupada was saying that whenever I visit the house of a wealthy man, I always pray to Krishna, please don't let me fall down. So we thought that was wonderful. And we were thinking, wow, Prabhupada, why did he say that? Prabhupada will never fall down. Why would he say that he always prays to Krishna to never let him fall down? He'll never fall down. And then after discussing it, we realized the reason Prabhupada will never fall down is because he's always praying to Krishna, please don't let me fall down. But material opulence and material enjoyment, they can attract even Vishwamitra, the great yogi who meditated for 60,000 years, and then he simply heard the ankle bells of Menaka. He didn't even see her. His eyes were like closed, half closed. He just heard her ankle bells, and 60,000 years of tapasya finished. A little jingling of the bells. So, you know, that was only one Menaka. Today there are thousands of Menakas in the street, so jingling their bells. So devotees always have to be very careful about the situation that we're in. So, what was I saying?
About Indra.
Huh? Oh yeah, about Indra. He came and he got envious of Krishna accepting all this worship, and he brought his Sambartaka cloud to inundate the whole of Vrindavan and teach the coward men a lesson. I'll show you guys. You know, you stop my worship, I'll flood your whole place. So Krishna, seeing that the residents of Vrindavan were in great distress, he just, you know, little 5-year-old kid, 8-year-old kid, he just lifted up a mountain with his little finger and held the mountain up for a whole week. But while he was holding up the mountain, he happened to notice his favorite girlfriends, the gopis. And because they were wet, their clothing clung to their bodies, so they became even more attractive. And kumkum was gliding down their breasts. And seeing that, Krishna became very overtaken by strong feelings of love. He began to shake and quiver, as men are sometimes apt to do. And so then the mountain began to shake, and then all the residents of Vrindavan, not the mountain, the hill, Govardhan Hill, all the residents of Vrindavan became very worried. Maybe Krishna's getting weak, you know, I mean, he's been holding this hill up for a long time. But Balaram, he knew what was happening, because he could understand Krishna's mind, so he was standing on the side, he was smiling, he was laughing, but everybody else was worried. So anyway, Krishna is known as Giridhari, and you'll be very happy to know that we have a very beautiful ashram there now, right at the foot of Govardhan. There's a nice guest house and ashram where devotees can go and rent a room and spend some time at Govardhan, which is right next to Shyamakundam, Radhakund. You did not accept the sumptuous feast of the wicked Duryodhana, but took the coarse food — coarse means plain food — offered by your devotee Vidura. Therefore you are worshipped by love and not by mere rituals. The Battle of Kurukshetra, it was destined to take place. Krishna wanted it to take place. There were too many violent persons on the planet, too many kings who were causing distress, fighting and disturbing people, and he wanted that they should, you know, go back to Godhead or change their bodies anyway. And they all were liberated. They all went to the heavenly planets, and some of them even went back to Godhead, being killed in Krishna's presence. But just for diplomacy's sake, at the very last moment before the war was about to begin, Yudhisthira was ready to accept 5 villages. The kingdom was actually his by right. His father, Pandu, was the actual king, and Pandu's sons, the Pandavas, were the rightful, lawful heirs to the throne. And then not only that, after losing the kingdom to the wicked Duryodhana, they went to the forest for 13 years and they fulfilled all the conditions. So the Kauravas should have given the kingdom back, but they didn't. So in every way, the Pandavas were righteous. But Yudhisthira was so gentle. Actually, he was more of a Brahmana than a Kshatriya. He didn't have the mentality of a Kshatriya so much. He was more interested spiritually and more like an ascetic. So Krishna went on Yudhisthira's behalf to try to avoid the war. So when he went to Hastinapur, Duryodhana and his group, Karna and Dushasana, they thought that they could attract Krishna by offering him a big feast and his name, and they gave him — whose palace was it? Dushasana's? No. Maybe it was Dushasana's. They gave him Dushasana's palace to stay in. It was the most opulent palace, even more than Duryodhana's. And, you know, they thought they would attract Krishna by that. But Krishna said, no, I can't accept it. I will stay with Vidura. And Vidura had a small place, and he offered Krishna a humble feast, a nice feast, but it was offered with love, yome bhakta prayachati. So Krishna accepted that. And that's the essence of bhakti yoga. We are endeavoring in so many ways to serve Krishna, and we're making so many arrangements, and sometimes the arrangements are successful and opulent, and sometimes they're not. I mean, our temple in Bombay, we get 5, sometimes on a bigger day, 10,000 people a day come to our temple. And it's one of the temples in the world where there's absolutely no financial problems. We have a lot of money in the bank. Now they're about to spend about $3 million to buy property and build a school and do so many other things, plans they have. But I personally, having lived 24 years just in Bombay, I was about 28 years in India, but most of that, right from the very beginning, I saw the growth of the whole project. It was right there when Srila Prabhupada was fighting for that project. And I'm feeling more joy and more happiness in this little hall with all of you sincerely chanting Hare Krishna than I am in this big opulent temple with bhajan singers who are, they're nice devotees too, I have to say they're nice devotees, but they're paid, they get a salary, and they're lazy. They're supposed to do 8 hours kirtan a day, they don't. They're good, they're the best mridanga players. I mean, we have good mridanga players, but these boys are, Bengalis. They're born with mridangas in their hands when they come out of the womb, there's this one, it's amazing, there's this one singer, his name is Dhritarashtra. Ironically, he's blind, he's been blind from birth. And he sings as sweet as anything.